My name's Will Durham. I'm the director of the Nevada Neon Project. Neon kind of went out of favor in most of the country in the late 50s, you know, being replaced with backlit fluorescent signs. But it's like Nevada didn't get the memo, and we just kept going and building these amazing neon monuments. And so it really became our folk art.
First, how long did you have this tape?
I sat on this tape for a little over 2 years, but it started with one guy, a friend of mine at the newspaper in Reno had done this story about this neon collector. So I kind of poached his idea and I went to talk to this guy, and it was a great interview, but I felt there was still some things that needed to be reported on it.
This is More to Say. I'm Doug Fabrizio. That is KUER's Julia Ritchie. And Julia had this same experience that happens to a lot of journalists, where you find a story that you want to tell. It's not super newsy, so you set it aside like she did. And for all kinds of reasons, you just don't get back to it. So she moved to Salt Lake City about a year and a half ago, came from Reno, and brought with her one of those stories about neon signs. And it's that neon light, those massive, splashy signs that for decades defined the golden age of decadence and spectacle in Las Vegas and Reno. And these days, there's still plenty of decadence and lights, but a lot of it comes from LED lights, you know, modern and sometimes computerized. Now, neon is still there, but it is old school for sure. And here's the thing that got Julia thinking that the story might work. All of those old famous signs in those sin cities, all of them are made here in Utah. Julia, welcome.
Thanks, yeah.
Okay, so what got you interested in neon?
So in early 2015, I decided to do this big, classic cross-country trip. I pulled into Reno, and I just started seeing the neon. I mean, it really did. It just glows. Yeah. And so I loved it. It was so different from the East Coast. It was so different from anywhere that I'd ever lived before.
Yeah.
Not that I hadn't seen neon, but not in that way.
Yep.
Not preserved.
How did you find Will Durham?
So my friend at the Reno Gazette Journal, he had done a story about Will, who had been just, he was born and raised in Reno. This is a guy, and he had the same affinity for it.
When I was a kid, I had a hard time going to sleep, and I would always see the glow of downtown Reno and the neon, and I knew that there was still action going on, and I wasn't the last one awake, and so that kind of gave me a little bit of...
I decided to go pay him a visit.
Let's see. There's a bunch of neon.
So we go down to his basement, and I was shocked.
It's a sign.
Is that the sound of neon?
No, that's actually... the water going.
Oh, okay.
You know, and I don't know if you've seen the show American Pickers, and they go in,
yeah,
like, wow,
yeah,
how did you, amass this collection of things?
Yeah.
And then we're, tripping over things, and he plugs it in, and you hear the zzz, zzz.
So this sign right here was on the northwest corner of Virginia and First Street. And of course, this was over the entrance to the famous Mapes Casino. The Mapes Casino was a very elegant place, but it also, I guess they still wanted to have that Wild West.
He has these neon signs stashed all over the desert in these, he probably doesn't want me to tell. He's like, don't tell people this. But he's really protective of them because they are collectibles. So he's rented these, I don't know what you call them, storage things. So his collection is spread out.
Yeah.
It's not all in his basement, so don't try to rob this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say his connection's really personal in some way.
Yeah, and Reno has this sort of inferiority complex since I live there, because people think the capital is Las Vegas. It's not. It's Carson City, which is closer to Reno.
Yeah.
But Reno used to be the entertainment capital of Nevada, not Las Vegas.
And so we have these, and it kind of helps the legacy continue. And so people can, people that have good memories from these places can be excited and reminisce when they see them. But then people that don't know anything about that history can learn about it and realize that, you know, maybe take a little bit more pride in the place that they live, that Reno was, you know.
So you talked to Will, and get this tape. And what, then the story just stalls out?
Yeah, I just didn't know what to do with it, you know. And I also was between, I was thinking about moving to Salt Lake. And so there was a lot of other things on my mind. I'm a little lazy too sometimes where, you know, when you get good tape and it's just exhausting to think about how to.
Totally.
And I was like, oh man, this is too much for me. I can't do this.
But you kept it.
Yeah.
So then you come to Utah. Mm-hmm. And did you know the Utah connection? Like, which I think is part of the theme of the piece, right? It's like the decadence that I mentioned of Nevada and gambling and staying up all night,
you
know, completely wasting your life savings against, you know, kind of.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing I noticed when I moved here is driving down State Street. There's a few neon signs, but nothing like Reno. And it's just such a stark contrast because Reno and Salt Lake look very similar with the mountain settings. Yeah. I mean, they're just boundaried by huge mountains. Yet one is like on fire with neon. And Utah's a little, you know, it's a little darker downtown. It's not as flashy. But I had heard about Yesco signs because, they're a huge company now. And they have locations in Reno and Las Vegas. And I knew that their headquarters were in Salt Lake.
Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Not all of our signs have big structure.
So I knew at some point that I wanted to tour the factory.
So this is our area dedicated to neon.
I had no idea about the history of Yesco, to be honest, until I went to the factory and talked to the third generation owner of the business. That, oh man, they've been doing this a long time.
Well, not only that, I mean, Thomas Young, the I guess the patriarch of the family, mm-hmm. he got in on the ground level of neon.
My grandfather was the visionary who was the artist who conceived of the earliest, biggest signs in Las Vegas. And neon,
his story just speaks to sort of the history of the railroad industry. So he came with his father from England. So they were British railroad workers in Ogden, which is, you know, the crossroads of the West.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's this, all these intersections of cool historical facts. So Thomas Young moves with his dad works on the railroad, he drops out of school, but he's a good artist, so he kind of likes signs, starts a sign company, and then he starts traveling all over, and he sees this, like, cool, trendy new technology, and he's like, wow, because L.A. was, like, kind of the first one that had a big neon sign, and so then it started spreading throughout the West. It just, like, took off. It's so cool to, like, trace it to this one guy, his travels in and out of Las Vegas, and he's like, I can do that, too.
Neon was a huge breakthrough in terms of, you know, people were just drawn to it, and I'm not sure that not mystique, but that attraction to neon has faded much after all these years. When you look at, I mean, you look up on the wall at that neon tube that we have there, you forget everything else in the room. You are immediately drawn to that light and that light source, and then you're saying, well, how'd that come to be? You know, we as humans.
They're at Yesco. They know that it's probably not the future,
mm-hmm.
but certainly the past. But how do they feel about neon there? I mean, one of the things you talk about in the piece is that it's not the same as an LED. Like, it's softer in some way. The curves are just different.
It's the way you make the sign is different. You're not plugging in little light bulbs. I mean, this guy, Dave Corey, has been doing it for 3 decades, is literally bending glass tubing, and he has a pattern. It looks like sewing, you know, where he's matching up his letter B with the pattern on the table. I mean, it's a really physical art form.
To be the ones to bring it to the world, it's really, really a fun job.
It's interesting because a lot of things that we have out there, I'll see come in and I'll say, that's one of our jobs. Just because I'll recognize the quality of the work.
Yesco views their neon shop as like this legacy, that it's important for them, that they know that they're intricately linked to the history of neon in the West, and so it would be really stupid to give that up, even though, you know, 90% of their business is LEDs and those really terrible billboards everywhere. Like, I think most people will be like, what? Yesco is doing artistically, like, significant work? And I'm like, yeah, they actually still are, but you probably know them from that billboard.
Right. Yeah. Well, and what I liked, too, is that there aren't very many Dave Coreys left, as is pointed out in the piece. And I loved this kind of image. You say that Dave thinks in kind of a third dimension.
I'm just curious, so when you have a pattern like that, like how do you figure out which way you're going to bend it? Like, do you have a technique?
Usually like this is a B, double tube B. You want to start on the inside and work your way out. And if you started on the outside, you're going to, you know, run into yourself. You want to try and lay it out, figure it out, bend it in a way that you're going to be able to just continually keep bending through that whole tube without running into yourself, without coming back into the tube that you've already bent.
When he starts a piece, it's got to end up the same way, right? It's one piece of tubing or a couple pieces of tubing at most. So like I asked him how long would a Wendover Will, is that huge, like one of those 40-foot cowboys that you see when you're driving into Wendover.
So great.
Yeah. I was like, how long would a sign like that take you?
The entire cowboy, that would be weeks worth of work for one person.
Does he do stuff like that anymore?
When repairs need it. So do you know that classic bowling sign on State
Absolutely.
Street?
Yeah,
that was last year that they did that. I asked them how long that took them. It was a little less neon work, but still a huge bowling pin.
Yeah.
I love it. That was, again, they repurposed it into this sort of, it's for condos or apartment buildings now, but they kept the bowling pin.
Do you think in some way this, and this may be overthinking this, but in some way the story kind of mirrors your own journey, you know, from there to here? Is there something personal in it in some way?
Yeah, I don't, it's weird. I was not raised in the 1950s. I was raised in like the 80s and 90s. But it's interesting how you can have nostalgia for something that you never experienced.
Yeah.
You know, I love Orange Julius's. I love malt. Like, I would drink everything with a stripy straw if I could. I like Norman Rockwell paintings.
All right, finally, what did this teach you about putting stories on hold or keeping the tape?
I said, good stories never die unless you let them. So even if your tape is 2 or 3 years old, there's always a way to bring it back to life. Just like a neon sign, you just gotta pump some more neon gas into that tube. And then put an electric charge on it and bring it back to life. And yeah, it's not impossible.
KUER's Julia Ritchie. Thanks.
Thanks.
More to Say is a production of KUER News. The team includes Tim Slover, Lee Hale, and Doug Fabrizio. Subscribe to More to Say and leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts.